Hey, nurses! This National Nurses Week 2025, it's time to celebrate you, the backbone of healthcare, with a vacation you truly deserve. Join Nurse.com for a luxurious group cruise aboard Virgin Voyages, sailing May 9th through May 14th. It's a celebration like never before, designed exclusively for nurses. Picture this. Tranquil ocean views, world-class amenities, and the chance to connect with your nursing community while leaving the stress of long shifts far behind. Plus, when you join us, you'll receive $200 in onboard credit per cabin to enjoy spa treatments, premium excursions, merchandise, and more. You spend every day caring for others. Now it's your turn. Let's trade scrubs for sandals and sail into National Nurses Week with joy, connection, and well-deserved relaxation. Register now to join the group trip at nurse.com/cruise. That's nurse.com/cruise. We can't wait to celebrate you. Hey, nurses. Welcome to the Nurse Dot Podcast, giving nurses validation, resources, and hope one episode at a time. Today on Nurse Dot Podcast.
Along the lines of this conversation about AI and healthcare, another thing that I would ask our audience to think about is the compelling event that's only about 6 years away, and that's the year 2030. And 2030 is important because every boomer will have aged out. So we will have so many people requiring care, and we don't have enough physical people to deliver the care. It's an exciting and critical time for our industry because we are going to have to reimagine how we're going to be delivering some of this care. Healthcare will be reinvented.
Joining us today, Antoinette Thomas, a nurse innovator and healthcare futurist. Antoinette is currently the worldwide chief experience officer at Microsoft. As a healthcare leader, Antoinette shares why nurses should embrace technology rather than fear it, and what the healthcare landscape is likely to look like in the not-so-distant future. I'm your host, Kara Lunsford, registered nurse and VP of Community at nurse.com. Let's do this thing, Antoinette. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Oh, okay. So when Rhea reached out to me and she said, oh, we have this really incredible opportunity to have this guest. And I said, yes, I saw this. And she's like, do you want to be on the call? I'm like, no, the first call that you did. And I was like, no, I don't want to be on the first call because I always like to meet somebody for the first time. I don't like things to be
scripted.
Like, oh, let me. Yeah,
yeah,
no,
fake.
No. Yes. I don't know if you've listened to any of our podcasts, but there's nothing scripted.
I know. And I love that so much because I sit on so many panels and I do a lot of podcasts and there's a lot of prep that goes into those, but then it does not seem like it's authentic, like it's practiced.
Yep. I know. And that's the absolute last thing that I want. I'm like, okay, what's the very minimum that I need to know about Antoinette Thomas so that I don't seem like a complete idiot when I come onto the podcast? But that is like, when I'm saying like the minimum, I'm like, oh, she's a nurse.
Yeah.
She works at Microsoft.
Yes.
Yes. So what I would really love is if you would introduce yourself to our audience, mm-hmm. and just a little bit about just who you are as a professional, as a person, mm-hmm. And then kind of how you've made your way into where you are today with Microsoft.
Yes. So Antoinette Thomas, also known as Tony. So if you want to call me Tony, feel free. A lot of people out in the industry know me as Tony as well. Nurse practitioner, actually. Data nerd, experience futurist, nursing futurist, some titles that I used to describe myself, but I am going into my 33rd year in healthcare. And so 19, I know, right? It's although I'm getting tired.
I hear you. I'm only at 17 and I'm pretty tired.
Yeah. So. Well, that's a good, that 17 is an important number to me, because got out of nursing school in 91 and went into my first job. And I did practice pediatric critical care for 17 years. So a full 17 years before coming out into the industry side. And I've been on industry now for 16. So that's just a little bit about my background. I started as a bedside nurse in the pediatric ICU. Absolutely loved it. I do remember, and I just told this story recently, Kara, I do remember the first like week on the job, and it was really more observation. And I can remember like the first day going out to my car in the parking lot at the end of the 12-hour shift and literally feeling so afraid about, oh my God, like, how am I going to do all this? How am I going to learn this? How am I going to help keep someone's child alive? But I knew I could do it. And that's really kind of, ICU was where I caught the bug for technology. And if I think about technology in 1991 versus today, and how new nurses have to integrate themselves into a job and into practice, and like how scared I felt at that time, and thinking about like how overwhelmed they might feel at this time, I can empathize. But did that for 17 years. Somewhere in the middle of that, got my master's degree. And then it was time to really kind of make a decision about what my next steps were going to be. And I thought about going back to be an anesthetist. And my husband was like, do we really want like to do 2.5 years of full-time school? You have kids. Like, how are we going to recoup that investment? And I'm like, you're right. And it was just kind of something that wasn't, I didn't have a passion about it, but I thought that would be something good for me to do. And then I thought, no, you know what? I love data. And I was kind of always one of those nurses that would volunteer for IT selection process or, you know, programs. I would volunteer for quality committee. So I thought, I'm going to try to get myself out on the tech side of the business. And that was early 2000s. And there were not a lot of clinicians going out into the tech industry. But I tried, you know, I used my network and I did use a recruiter for the first time and was able to get some interviews with a company. And everyone that's in nursing will know the Alaris Smart IV pump, which is now, I think BD owns Alaris. But at the time, it was just a standalone little company, the first smart IV company. And I went to work for them. And I remember the guy that hired me. He said, we really want you on this team. He said, but there's a lot of people above me who are telling me this is going to be a bad idea. And I asked him why. Mm-hmm. And he said, because they're afraid that you're going to hate it and that we're going to invest all of this time, money, to train you, to educate you, and then you're going to go back to the hospital. And I said, I will know within the first 2 or 3 weeks whether or not this is for me, and I will be honest with you. Like, I'll tell you right away. And I never hated it. I loved it. And, you know, 16 years later, here I am. I've worked for various companies.
Why did they think you were going to hate it?
Like, they thought,
like, what did they think you were going to hate about it?
I think they thought I was going to miss the bedside so terribly. And I'm not going to lie, I did miss the bedside. You know, like when that's such a big part of your life for so many years, being at the bedside and interacting with people in very vulnerable times of their lives, and you're helping them, like you do miss that. And you do miss, there's a certain energy about the hospital, a vibe. And you miss that a little bit. You miss, you know, all the companionship of the nurses that you are working with and getting through the day with. So I did miss that. And there are still times, like when I go and visit my customers now, there's still times where like, oh my gosh, it's like riding a bike. Like you walk in the hospital door and the vibe is still there.
Yep.
So that's kind of what they were thinking, but I loved it. And I was learning so much. And there was no like instruction manual for nurses or physicians or any other type of clinician at that time to come into that world. So I was learning things from scratch, but applying all of my clinical background and my experience to that, you know, that new knowledge. So that's a little bit about me. I've worked for some startups along the way, which also was tremendously beneficial for my career because startups are like getting your MBA without having to pay for an MBA.
And thank you. I keep saying that I want some university, anyone who's out there listening, anyone,
yes,
that as a nurse who was a founder of a startup, who then sold my startup to nurse.com, Relias, I keep saying, like, I should have an honorary MBA.
Yes.
I'm like, someone should give me an honorary MBA.
Yes. You're learning, you know, about product, how to build a product, how to launch a product, how to work with all the different teams in the startup organization to bring the product to market. If you have a board of directors, your investors, your the secretary,
all of it,
finance, all of it. And you live quarter to quarter.
Yep.
It's
you
just
live day
a new
to day.
Way. Day to day. Yeah.
You're like, are we going to be open tomorrow? I don't know. Maybe
yes.
Not.
Yes. But, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, startups are the number one way to change your mind about what's possible.
Yes.
Because it's really hard. And you just wake up every day and you're like, I'm going to do the best I can do. And we're flying the plane as we build it. And I know that's a cliche statement, but it is absolutely true.
100%.
And you really learn what you're made of.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. I know it's not for everyone. And we talk a little bit about that, like on some of the other episodes that we've done about entrepreneurship and innovation and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But you definitely get to see what you're made of. Mm-hmm. And you realize you're more resilient than you thought. You're stronger than you thought. You're more innovative than you thought, more creative. You have to find creative ways to survive, especially through difficult economic times,
yes,
through a pandemic. That was my challenge, was trying to keep my business alive through a pandemic. And it's one of those classic things of doing the hard thing, getting outside your comfort zone. We talk about that kind of ad nauseum, but it's so true. And it sounds to me like that's exactly what you've done, which is you were probably super comfortable to some extent after that many years in pediatric critical care. I mean, you were probably one of the experts, one of the senior nurses. You're the go-to person. You kind of go in and you're like, I've seen so much at this point.
Yeah.
And to leave that it's exciting. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you were excited on some level, but it's also really scary. And we have identity crisis. Am
yes.
I a real nurse anymore?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that's such an important point, because when I was doing this, like I said, you know, this is early 2000s. There weren't many other people that I could call up on the phone and say, I'm struggling right now. I'm trying to make this decision. You know, even my parents were like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, you've gone to school for 7 total years. And I'm like, I'm sure. I'm grown. I'm sure. And I know it seems very risky, but I really feel like it's going to pay off. And it did. But yes, having to like give up this identity that you have had, your credentials. And I was like, oh my gosh, will I still be able to use my credentials? And I can tell you, like, every tech company is, oh my God, the credentials make a difference. But there were also nurses when I left who were like, oh, you're going to the dark side. you know, you're not going to be a real nurse anymore. And I did let that, I know, I did let that get to me for a little bit. It's hard not to, but that was absolutely not the truth, you know? And I realized that right away. I always tell people, I have never stopped practicing nursing. I just have a different tool set that I use. And, you know, for me, like, life is really about what are you going to do for other people? How are you going to help other people? And that's why I love nursing so much. And I feel that in my roles since leaving bedside practice, like, I get to help thousands of people at a time. And that makes me feel really good.
I feel the same way, Toni, that I very similarly, I've just shifted my focus. And now the people that I'm taking care of are nurses. And so I'm using my nursing background to take care of this population of people that are really suffering and having a very difficult time. And my ratio is not great. It's 1 to 4 million. It's really tough.
Yes. True story.
I was like, wait, you got 1 to 5? I got 1 to 4 million.
Like, right.
My ratio is really off. Yeah. But I'm really just taking so much of what I did. I did pediatric oncology for the first like 8 years of my career at Children's Hospital. And, you know, I'm just taking so much of what I learned along the way as a director of nursing, as a, you know, just everything that I'm home health, hospice, all the different areas that I've worked in, and taking all of that and using that now. And I, like you, am very excited about AI. Mm-hmm. I know people are kind of scared of it. So like let's talk for a second about just like the fear factor.
Yeah. So I kind of look at the fear factor from a couple different angles. First is, if we think about it on a macro level, AI right now, AI has been around and it's been used in healthcare, but just in this last year, it's really come to the forefront for multiple reasons. But we are living in a time right now of great change and instability in our world, not just in our country. And so people on a macro level are dealing with all of these changes and uncomfortable things and uncertainty. And like any good invention that's going to change things for the better, it tends to pop up when there is a lot of change. You know, I think of like Thomas Edison and the light bulb. I think of Henry Ford. Okay, we're not going to do horses and carriages anymore. I'm going to start this assembly line. We're going to make a car. Like all of these great shifts in AI.
The buggy whip makers were not happy about that.
They were not happy.
The buggy whip makers were not happy.
They were not. So AI is the same thing. And on a macro level, it's really hard right now. On a more micro level, I think that, you know, the fear, there's also like this misinformation that goes around, and we cannot catch up with all the rapid exchange of information, social media, fake news, whatever we want to call it. So there's a lot of uncertainty in how people understand AI and what it is and how it's going to help. So on a micro level, people get concerned about, like, is it going to take my job? Is it going to take my agency away in my job? And, you know, there might be some of that that will go on, but the majority of how AI is going to be used is not going to be used in that way. It's going to be to enhance the work that you do. So if we take nurses, for example, and I know our core audience is really kind of like the bedside nurse, people that are going in, day out and delivering that care. So the one potential out of many for AI is to take a lot of that task burden away and automate some things for them to free up their IQ work and do the things that they're trained and educated to do. And I think perhaps for nurses, a lot of fear is around the fact that when decisions about AI are being made, in institutions where they're employed, they're brought in after the majority of the decisions about that are made, not on the front end where they could say, all right, let's really sit down and talk about how it is we work, how it is we function, whether or not, you know, let us share our points of view and our experience so we can make the most informed decision. And I feel like it's insane that it's 2024 and we're still talking about nurses and nursing leadership not being at the table at the right moment when these decisions are being made.
We got to get that is.
I think part of it, this is just, you know, me kind of with like where I sit at Microsoft and the ability to be involved in these very high level strategic discussions is we have to equip nurses with the ability to better articulate a business plan. Not just like, hey, we have this much budget and we want to spend money, but a business plan. So like if they have an idea about how to use something or they have an idea about something that's being positioned with them that they feel is not a good idea, like put together all the data around that, put together a business plan, be able to articulate that to the CFO, the CEO, the COO, and say, this is why I'm saying asking you for something, or this is why I'm saying no. So that's like one big thing. The other thing is that nurses are not, we can't bill for our services. We are looked at as like a charge center in the hospital. So when people are making decisions, maybe that is a bias that they have in their mind of not inviting the nursing leadership to the table. Mm-hmm. And decisions are made and budgets are created and they're then pushed off onto the CNO. So yep. Those are just a couple of thoughts that I have.
Are you familiar with the Commission for Nurse Reimbursement and
yes.
Rebecca Love and everything?
Yes, I know Rebecca.
So I interviewed her. I love Rebecca. I've known her
She's
for
great.
Years, but I love her.
Mm-hmm.
Love her. Yeah. So you're familiar, and because that your
yes.
second point addresses exactly what she's talking about.
Yes, and I think it's going to take a long time for things for that to change. But what Rebecca's doing, she's doing a lot of work in that area. And then she's also working to get nursing identified as a STEM profession, which I think is also
yes.
is so important.
She's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
She's such a cool person. Yeah. So I completely agree with you. And I also wanted to say, for those of you nurses that are listening to this and saying, well, how do I don't have time to write a business plan. Let me just tell you, you can use AI for that.
You can use AI for that.
You know, I actually, we make business cases sometimes even at the corporate level. So like mm-hmm. when you come into corporate and you have an idea or you want to do something and you want money for it, you have to make a business case for that.
Mm-hmm.
So all these years, I had to write business plans from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know anything, had
That's
to do
right.
basic, did do the research, had to look at other people's business plans, get examples, try to understand the flow of it and the objective nature of it and the subjective nature of it and all of this stuff, right? And then recently I had an idea and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, write a business case for this. I think I could use ChatGPT for this.
Yes.
I type it in and I sat back and I went,
right? My life has just been changed.
Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Like what I could have done if I had this years ago, how much time I would have spent, how many hours poring over. And look, you know, I learned a lot doing all of that. I think all of what I did helped me to know what to put into ChatGPT, like, because,
yes.
you know, what you put in matters. How I put that information into ChatGPT, I got a really, really good business case out of it. But that's something that you guys can consider, you know, y'all can consider when you're trying to get your point across and you want to be heard. Because yes. I think that that's exactly the point, Antoinette.
Yes, it is. And I think that if we take the fear out of AI and how it's going, the fear about how it's going to affect you, and actually use AI to empower people to think differently. Like, you made such an important point of like how to ask ChatGPT or GPT 4.0 now questions. And this is where, you know, sitting down, empowering yourself and thinking about those prompts. Like, how am I going to get the most? Because at the end of the day, GPT 4.0 is smart. but, you know, it's sitting over a corpus of data. So that corpus of data is either the World Wide Web data, or that's your organization's data if they are allowing the use of things like GPT, or in Microsoft world, you know, our Copilot capabilities.
But love,
like, understanding, I think this is another big problem too, is that we have a skilling and knowledge problem around AI, and we're trying to figure out whose responsibility is it to empower nurses or nursing students, whether that's through, you know, your professional training, about what these tools are. You don't have to go in the weeds. You don't have to understand all the complexities of large language models, Kara, but you have to understand the basics of how these things work. And then I think the more they would understand it, the less afraid that they would be.
Hey, nurses, are you ready to elevate your nursing career? The Wound Care Education Institute can help you reach your goals with expert training in skin and wound management, diabetic wound care, and ostomy management. WCEI offers the largest selection of wound care learning options, designed to enhance your skills, build your confidence, and prepare you for board certification exams. With flexible formats, on-demand, live online, or on-site, you can choose what fits your schedule. Thousands of nurses have trusted WCEI to take their careers to the next level. Now it's your turn. Save $100 on new certification courses with code SAVE100 at checkout. Visit WCEI.net to explore course options and start your journey today. Offer valid on new purchases only, excludes recertifications and refresher courses.
So
you have to also be willing to be curious, right? Like, there's this curiosity aspect of it where, look, even if you're by yourself, don't tell anybody you're doing it, okay?
Yeah.
Just get the ChatGPT, get it on your phone, get the app.
That's right.
I got it so early on that I think I paid the $99, the one time $99, and then I never have to pay again, and I just get all of the updates.
You're a lucky girl.
Because I know. But see, that's like being early adoption, right? Like, that is not being afraid and going, I need to know what this thing is.
Yes.
I got to get in there, see what it's about, drop some money into it and say, I'm going to invest in this. And be curious. Like, it's okay. It's not going to bite you. I promise.
It's not.
And the more you play around with it, the more you will see the value. I had it solve a marital dispute. I'm not kidding. Literally dropped in a chat exchange. I'll tell you that I found out I was wrong. So it's not always going to tell you what you want to hear, because I was like, this isn't right.
Yeah, I know. I will on occasion ask it like existential type of questions, you know, like, why not?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you can get it's thought provoking, mm-hmm. right? And that's what you can explore with it, is you say, like, look, this is kind of a non-biased per se view
right.
of things. When I was using it for the chat exchange, I was kind of like, I'm not going to go to our therapist and ask about this. I'm going to ask ChatGPT because our therapist is going to be like, Dawn was right about this thing and I don't want to hear it.
I wish I could see Dawn in the background right now. This is so precious.
Oh, she's not even here. She's going to hear this later. But it's like, you know, it's being really authentic and being really vulnerable. But sometimes you can play around with these things, because I will tell you, like, I think everybody has been afraid of things. They were afraid of the internet. They were afraid of, you know, going from a typewriter to a computer. They were afraid of giving up their flip phone for an iPhone or a smartphone.
Yeah, or they were afraid. Remember in the pandemic when we did not know what was going on? We had no access to information. We certainly didn't have a way to query GPT and ask it questions to kind of like, I always like look at compelling events in healthcare. That was definitely a compelling event for so many reasons. But, you know, along the lines of this conversation about AI and healthcare, I think another thing that I would ask our audience to think about is the compelling event that's only about 6 years away, and that's the year 2030. And 2030 is important because every boomer will have aged out. So we will have so many people requiring care, and we don't have enough physical people to deliver the care. And so it's an exciting and critical time for our industry, because we are going to have to reimagine how we're going to be delivering some of this care. Healthcare will be reinvented. And, you know, thinking about that in terms of the number of people that we have, like, the pipeline's not getting full, because we're also, people are having less children. So we're not repopulating the generation ahead of us. AI has to play a role in helping us prioritize the needs of the people that need care. It'll help us with how we deliver virtual care or care in the home, understanding how maybe retail health can form new business relationships with healthcare systems to offset some of the primary care. There's a whole slew, mm-hmm. a whole list of things that compelling event is going to bring us.
And imagine, like, how wonderful it would be, right? I had this conversation with my mother-in-law the other day, and she's 93.
Oh, my.
And she's very, like, she just stopped playing volleyball 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But she's just,
that's
she's
goals.
Amazing. But, you know, she has an iPhone. She texts. She's on Instagram. She does all the things. She has stayed up with technology, which is amazing. And I said to her, I'm like, you know, Mom, sometimes you think, you know, when you get into a doctor's office and the doctor's like sitting there in front of the computer, and you're kind of upset that he or she hasn't had a chance to really look at your file or really understand mm-hmm. your past medical history. And you immediately lose confidence when they ask you about things that you're like, well, don't you know I had a mastectomy or something like that? She didn't, but like it's
yes.
saying it's like, no, I don't have breasts anymore or something like that.
Yeah. That and personalization.
That personalization. Right. And you, cause you immediately lose confidence in your healthcare provider
right
off the bat. And what if you could, as a healthcare provider, be able to say, okay, before I go in and see Ms. Ventor, please catch me up on her relevant past medical history and, you know, why she's here today and how it's, you know, so that I can walk in the room and have an intelligent conversation mm-hmm. and make her feel confident that I understand, you know, where she's been, and not recommend things that are not going to be helpful to her. Mm-hmm. And And that is something that AI could do for you.
Yeah. Yeah. In my role, so my official role at Microsoft is as the chief experience officer. So I really focus on the consumer experience in health and healthcare. And we on purpose focus on health and healthcare. And we use those terms together because you're a patient when you're inside the four walls of a hospital receiving some sort of care. But all other times you're a consumer and you're trying to stay healthy. You want to know how to stay healthy. So a big thing that we talk about in the experience space, Kara, is how AI can be used to create those longitudinal personalized experiences, how the person can be an N of one and be known every time they pick up the phone to call, whether it's the Cleveland Clinic or CVS Health or whatever, like the N of one, know me. And then also, like, there is, I'm not sure if you've ever had anyone on talking about behavioral nudging. So it's essentially a way, it's all AI in the background, but it can nudge you, meaning send you text or a voice message or an email or a message to your portal about health-related activities, or it can be aligned to a specific disease care management program where it'll give you the little nudges. Did you do this today? Or think about this. Or, you know, your medication, if you take it on time, will do this. So nudging is really coming up as a way to kind of, you know, really emphasize that N of one and produce the outcomes that we really need to move the needle in healthcare.
Yeah. And why is it that people are so much more accepting, or why they embrace technology telling them what to do as opposed to like person. if I were to nudge my wife or nudge my mother about something, right?
Yeah. Because
they're like, stop nagging me.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they just, you know, everyone has a different behavioral profile too, and how they interact with people or knowledge or information. But these nudges behind them, there's a lot of social science and behavioral science that's built into the large language models. So the more data that LLM takes in and can understand about how people behave, the more distinct and personal and on point that nudge can get. So yeah, and it's not coming from a person.
Which is so objective, right?
Yeah.
It's completely objective. There's no ulterior motive.
Yeah.
You know, because as much as you would like to think that people will assume positive intent, they don't.
They don't.
They don't. And
this is why healthcare is hard.
Yeah, they're judging me. They're shaming me. They're I feel bad because you're very slim and you're telling me to watch my calories,
yes,
or that you're telling me to look at my diet. Well, how dare you, because you don't understand how I feel because you're thin or you're slender.
Yes.
Right? So there's this like really interesting, this is why if I went back to school, I would be like a sociology major. I say this all the time, that I am fascinated by people and why they respond the way they do and why they do what they do. And this is why I think it's really interesting. And I do think that people are going to somehow develop a certain emotional relationship with AI.
I am with you.
Yeah. Because I catch myself in it. I say please and thank you to AI when I'm asking for something, or I'll say, would you mind rephrasing that for me? Or, you know, I find myself being intentionally polite.
Correct. Correct. And reformatting your prompts and your questions, it would be like trying to butter up somebody that, you know, that you might not have the best relationship with, or that you're trying to get information from. It's the same thing. And I do it all the time also. And I think that I'm with you. We're going to see more and more and more of that. And I would love to see that. Like, I would love to see nurses be able to interact with AI in real time as they're practicing, or have the AI deliver them something and, you know, pieces of information that help them make their decision, and then see them interact back with it and provide it feedback. Like, you know, that's the future. And I think we will see that happen, but agree, like, everyone's going to learn to behave differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's going to be really, really interesting to see how this evolves.
Yeah. I just had a great conversation with one of the nursing leaders from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And you're peds, and you know, like, how amazing that institution is. They're very
love chop. Love
chop. So do I. They yep. lean in hard. They want to be first adopters. They want to fail forward. They're innovative, all that stuff. And she said to me that one of her goals is to change the culture of nursing at CHOP, which is already a great culture, but change the nursing where informatics and data is not something someone else does. It is part of who you are as a nurse at CHOP. And I was like, that is gold. Like, just get it ingrained in their mindset from the time that they start their employment, or, you know, change the culture for the nurses who have been there for a while. But I think that that's a very cogent statement, because she's trying to prepare them for the future. And, you know, data and informatics is not something someone else does. I love it.
Yeah. And it's so true. And when you can start to enjoy it for what it does for you in your own personal life, and then start to see what it can do for your family, for the people you care about, being like, oh gosh, you know what? I don't have to be the nag anymore. I just get to be the daughter, or I just get to be something else is nudging. And I can have a conversation about that with my mom or with my sister. I can say, oh, well, you know, what is it nudging you to do? Or what is it saying? What are these prompts you're getting? And let's talk about it as a nurse, as a daughter, like as a sister. And I feel like that's freedom.
It is freedom. And I think about it in terms, like, I have my youngest brother, who'll be 45. He's on the spectrum. And he's, you know, he's independent. He lives on his own. He's worked in a factory for 26 years. But when my mom goes, you know, he's got some health problems. And when she goes, I will be the person in charge of making sure that everything about his health and the care that he needs is in order. But I think about him in terms, because he has a smartphone and he gets into his portal and he takes what his doctor says so seriously. But I think about that in terms of, like, those nudges for him and just those daily reminders, or those gentle reminders where it's not his mother or one of his siblings nagging on him, or him feeling like they're constantly like he's a grown man, you know? And I think that there's just so much potential across all types of abilities for what AI can do for the patients.
Yes, absolutely. I think that autonomy and that feeling of independence. Mm-hmm. I know that my mother-in-law loves to feel independent. The more independent she can feel, the better, right? And I look forward to the day that self-driving cars are, you know, just the common thing, because imagine, like, how much more independence someone could have if they're like, look, I don't have to stop driving. My car just drives me to the store and back. Because people are afraid. Older people are sometimes afraid of things like, you know, Uber. They don't want to get in a car with somebody they don't know, or they feel, you know, they don't feel comfortable. They want to have their car. And so I'm really looking forward to these advancements in technology, because I think it is going to provide people with a better quality of life. And that is going to allow them to just move through the world in a way that they can really thrive, like through their years. If they live to be 100, it's like, you know, they could really be thriving. And that to me is exciting, and it outweighs any of the potential scary things of AI. Because if you look at everything that we have, I could give you a list of pros and a list of cons.
Yeah, there's bad actors in everything.
In everything. But you don't not do it, right? Just because there's these people that abuse it, or they misuse it, or they... It doesn't mean that we don't use those new pieces of technology, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, when we first announced our partnership with OpenAI at Microsoft, it was like there were very few people in our company that knew that was happening. Only the people that had to be in the know. So when that whole thing came about, it was a very exciting time. And things started to move so quickly, but it's also like you feel like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? And then, you know, all of the talk, people should slow down on AI, and I don't know if this is a good idea. And, you know, and our CEO, who is just like, I feel like there are very few CEOs in the history of our country that will be as impactful or as inspirational as Satya Nadella. He is a futuristic thinker, and he's a very empathetic man. And he said, we have a responsibility in our world right now. And I understand what everyone is saying, and nothing that they're saying is inaccurate. There is potential for negative, but we have to look at what we need to step up and do to help the world. And that just like put me on the forward track. I'm like, he's absolutely right. Like, if he's not scared, I'm not going to be scared.
I love that. Yeah. What a wonderful thing for him to do as a leader. Because I'm going to also add in here that something that is really important to nurses, nurse practitioners, to doctors, to healthcare professionals, health equity.
Yes.
Right. And there are people in certain areas of the country, of the world, that do not have access to the same level of care as people in other major metropolitan areas, this and that. But why should they get less quality, right? Yeah. Why should they not
or poor
be
outcomes.
Getting poor outcomes? You know, additionally, if you're concerned about bias, right? And if someone is feeding information into OpenAI to spit out some potential diagnosis and rule out this, rule out that, guess what? OpenAI is not going to be biased about who you are. You know, where do you fall from a social economic standpoint, or psychosocial, or what race are you? Are you a person of color? Are you not? Like, that is all not going to be a factor. And then imagine if your doctor gets a whole rundown of, you need to rule out these 10 things or these 5 things. Well, now the doctor has a responsibility, or the professional has a responsibility, to take those things into consideration. Otherwise, it might be considered negligence or malpractice.
Yeah.
Right? To say you were fed this information and you didn't do it.
Health
right?
equity is a pinnacle topic for AI. And I think whether you're a nurse, any type of clinician, any type of thinker, I think, you know, there are going to be future roles that will be made around data science, making sure that we don't widen the gap between haves and have-nots. We already have that problem, and we can use AI as a tool to help solve that. something so very important, and we haven't spent a lot of time talking about it in this hour, is how AI can be used to develop more precise or precision treatment, so precision medicine. And most of the research that's done today is done on data sets that are very rich with white males as the subjects or the data sets. And so the treatments aren't as targeted as they could be. And so AI is going to kind of like liberate some of the data or help us understand where we have gaps in data and we need to do more research. For example, African-American females, infant and maternal mortality is one area. Also African-American males, heart disease, chronic kidney disease. I could go on and on and on, but it's going to help us develop more precision treatments and develop them more quickly and also move from treatment to cure and eliminate a lot of human suffering. So that is really an area that I like to pay attention to because I feel like so important. We're not helping anybody if we're not really understanding how their body works and what type of treatments would be best for them.
One of the things that's really interesting to me is, you know, where we make our investments as a country oftentimes are tied to some sort of monetary fiscal advantage to some extent. So we tend to see investments where, you know, where the money is going to have a nice return. So how do we see making these advances, like what's in it for us kind of thing? Like the people who are at the, we know what's in it for the recipients, right? For the consumers. That seems pretty obvious, right? What, you know, we've kind of talked about like what's in it for the healthcare professionals, what's in it for them? What's in it for these, because we are a capitalist country.
Yes, this is a great question. So in healthcare, our entire healthcare business is built on reimbursements, so the payers. Our entire healthcare system is designed right now toward or around the largest payer in our country, which is Medicare. We need to support those receiving Medicare and understand like hospitals are paid on taking care of Medicare patients, and that's the meat and bones of what they do. But we have other generations where we need to build and design a healthcare system that's suitable for everyone, that allows our payers to make the money and allows hospitals to make money. But in healthcare 2.0, what we really need to do, where I think AI can help us so much, Kara, is understanding that we need to keep people healthier. We need to figure out a way. We need to bring primary care back. We are in desperate need of it because we can't continue to scale to the level of chronic illness that we have in this country. So we need to figure out a way that primary care can make the payers money and can make the healthcare systems money, the retail health's money, and satisfy what the majority of people need. Like if you look at what the younger generations want out of their healthcare experience, they want a relationship with a provider, but they also want quick and easy access. So they're utilizing a little bit of retail health. They want tips on how to be healthy. They want mental health care. We've got to figure all of that out and find a win-win in our capitalistic society, just as you said, because we're not going to get rid of the structure that we haven't. We can't tear it down and start back from scratch. We have to figure out a way to reinvent what we have.
Yeah. Well said. Sometimes as I'm talking to somebody and the interview is unfolding, I get these thoughts that come into my head. And I'm like, oh, I have to ask her about this. I have to ask her about that. I have to ask her about
this. You are an excellent communicator and you ask very good questions.
Oh, thank you, Tony.
Very thoughtful.
Thank you. Well, I enjoy it. This is like probably one of my favorite parts of my job. It's a small part of what I get to do at Relias and nurse.com. But I really, really enjoy it. And so I'm just so grateful that you came on and shared your time with me today. I can't wait to meet you in person.
I know. I hope that this is the start of a more developing relationship, because I really want to evangelize the work that you're doing. And I'd love to bring some other nursing thought leaders that I work with to the table to like introduce you to them.
Absolutely. I would love that. I would love that. Please feel free to send anyone over and let's reconnect soon.
Let's do it.
And think of other ways to help bring this healthcare 2.0 to fruition.
Let's do it.
Thanks, Tony.
And thank your lovely wife for me. Have a great day.
I will. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. If you're a nurse or nursing student that enjoyed this episode, visit us at nurse.com/community, where you can find the NurseDot discussion group, a place where we dissect each episode in detail and delve deeper into today's topics. NurseDot is a nurse.com original podcast series. Production, music, and sound editing by Dawn Lunsford. Production coordination by Rhea Wade. Additional editing by John Wells. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in to the NurseDot podcast. Until next time, keep spreading the love and the care.